You're listening to Björk Unraveled, a series that demystifies Björk's music one piece at a time. I'm your host, Savannah Wright. One of the most common complaints about Björk's music is her voice. And these complaints aren't unfounded. Sometimes she grinds her vocal cords together. Sometimes she wails. And yes, sometimes she shrieks. Her vocal quirks even became the subject of SNL jokes. Here's Kristen Wiig playing Björk in a skit from 2012.
Björk, how do you live such a quirky life?
It's easy. Take things you like and make them different. If you like swans, make them a dress. If you like screaming, make it music.
It's not just the vocal techniques that throw you. She also breaks up words in unusual ways and puts the emphasis on whichever syllable suits her purpose. So a word like coordinates becomes coordinates.
Find our mutual coordinates.
And that makes her voice even more foreign to English listeners. So I get why some people have issues with her voice. It's unusual, and it takes some getting used to. But if you suspend your discomfort, you might realize how rich and true to life it is, because it evokes the full spectrum of emotion.
People get frustrated with her, and they're like, why does she scream in her songs? And it's like, why are there cymbals in an orchestra?
That's my sister, Marissa. She introduced me to Björk's music.
Because it's like, why not? You know, like, because that sound is necessary. Like, the strings are necessary, the beautiful sustained vibrato, but so is the loud crashes and bangs. And so is the really forceful push of the trumpets. And I feel like she gets all of those qualities.
So in this episode, I'm going to explore how Björk's vocals add texture and depth to her songs, specifically in her third studio album, Homogenic. I'll discuss a few songs from that album with my sister Marissa, to understand why Björk's unusual vocals are integral to her music.
I feel like her music isn't really meant to be beautiful. It is, but that's not the goal. Like, the goal is to be raw and unfiltered and honest.
And through it all, we'll learn why music isn't just an aesthetic experience. It's a visceral experience. Released in 1997, Homogenic eschews the heterogeneous mixtures of debut and post for a more cohesive sound. While Björk was working on the album, she described it this way.
When I did debut and post, they were very much like greatest hits of my musical passions for all my life. And I knew it would take two albums to do that. That's why I called them debut and post, before and after, of getting rid of the back catalogue almost, you know, gracefully, you know, because you can only move on if you do that, you know. So this is like a fresh start for me. And that's why I want to call this album Homogenic or Genus or Genius or whatever. I'm still working on that because it's one flavor. It's just me now, you know, here. And it's going to be, instead of like all these different instruments, it's just going to be beats, strings, and voice.
Björk wrote Homogenic after returning from London to Iceland and falling in love all over again with her home country. Here's what she said about the album's inspiration in an interview for Ur. Quote, in Iceland, everything revolves around nature, 24 hours a day. Earthquakes, snowstorms, rain, ice, volcanic eruptions, geysers. Very elementary and uncontrollable. But at the other hand, Iceland is incredibly modern. Everything is high-tech. The number of people owning a computer is as high as nowhere else in the world. That contradiction is also on Homogenic. The electronic beats are the rhythm, the heartbeat. The violins create the old-fashioned atmosphere, the coloring. Close quote. Homogenic is one of a handful of records to get a perfect 10 on Pitchfork. In the review, Philip Sherburne suggests that this album is perfect because of Bjork's voice, not in spite of it. And that's why I wanted to use Homogenic to discuss her vocals. Here's what Sherburne said. Bjork's voice is, without question, the life force of this music. A diligent student could try to transcribe her vocals the way jazz obsessives used to notate Charlie Parker's solos, and you'd still come up short. The physical heft and malleability of her voice outstrips language. Well, Bjork was actually a jazz fan growing up. In fact, before debut, she recorded an album called Glinglow with Icelandic covers of jazz standards. As you've probably heard, improvisation is a key component of jazz. So when jazz vocalists improvise, it's called scat singing. The singer improvises melodies and rhythms with wordless vocals. They use their voice as an instrument rather than a speaking medium. I actually love that Philip Sherburne brought up Charlie Parker here, because you can hear that freewheeling style in one of the songs on Glinglow. It's called Kara Rokar. Listen to this clip. It honestly reminds me of the shrieks of Parker's alto sax in some of his solos, like in the beginning of Constellation. So this may explain why Bjork's jazz vocal techniques might feel unusual for a pop song. It also might explain the way she breaks up words in unusual ways. There's actually a funny story about this that her father shares in the book Bjork, Wow and Flutter by Mark Pytlick. One day when Bjork was a teenager, she stormed into the house looking for an English book. She said she needed words for some lyrics. Her dad asked, "Why do you need some English book? Doesn't it matter what the words are?" And she countered, "I'll take every fifth word from page 20. And she did that, opened the book and took every fifth word. She said that words didn't matter, it was the sounds. He goes on to say, "I went and heard what she was doing, and she was not singing, 'I love you.' She was just making sounds following the instruments that were playing." Bjork's musical wordplay is also one of the reasons my sister fell in love with her work.
I love words and language in general, so I love that she was appreciating the word just for its sound and not necessarily for its meaning. There wasn't a right way to say it. It was like more about the overall sound than about, let me just sing these lyrics on a page. I thought it was fun how she manipulated it.
I wanted to talk to Marissa for this series because she introduced me to Bjork's music. I remember driving around with her and listening to Homogenic. I thought it was very theatrical, and I wasn't sure if I liked it at first. But as the younger sister, I decided that whatever my older sisters liked must be good. Funny enough, that's exactly how Marissa discovered Bjork, too, through our oldest sister, Natalie.
I listened to Bjork because she put it in the CD player and loved it, I would say instantly. What impressed me so deeply was the sound she achieved with her vocals, because it was so different from anything that I had heard. I feel like it was very raw and unrefined, but still incredible and beautiful and powerful. I was really impressed by the power behind her voice. And reflecting on it now, I liked that it was more of like a raw power instead of, I've heard a lot of quote unquote powerful voices because I'm interested in musical theater and more like classically trained type singing, but it wasn't like an operatic power. It was just like a, just the deep, unrefined, unfinished quality of power in her voice. So when I think of a refined power to it, I'm thinking of singers who are singing from their diaphragm and they're belting. They have this really loud sound. If you were to compare instruments, it's like their sound is more like a string sound and her sound is more like a brass sound where it's pushing out the air. And I also love that I could hear not just singing in her voice, but like yelling, you know, when she's angry, yelling, screaming, kind of a growl sound to it, but also that straight non-vibrato sound to it when she's having those big, what other people might call like a belting moment, but it sounded so different from other kinds of singing that I had heard. The lack of vibrato also, I think, strips away any pretense of showmanship in her voice, you know, like, ooh, look at me, I have a nice voice, you know, and it's less about that and more about the emotional message.
Some artists sing about being fed up. Björk grinds her vocal cords in a snarl. Some artists sing about being sad. Björk wails. Some artists sing about being frustrated. Björk screams. It's very show not tell, and it can throw people off, but not Marissa.
I felt so liberated by the fact that she was going there in her emotional representation in the piece. Like, I feel like, who does that? You know what I mean? Nobody does that, but that's what's so special. It's like, if you're, I feel like maybe people who don't like it, maybe they haven't gotten in touch with their feelings. You know, like, I feel like you have to get in touch with your feelings and be okay experiencing all those feelings. And I love that she's not afraid to lose control in conveying that emotion, which is so liberating if you're experiencing it, because we experience those things anyway. So you might as well let it out instead of running away from it, hiding it, or calling it unacceptable.
Well, everyone, it's time to get in touch with our feelings. Let's talk about three homogenic songs that capture three different emotional landscapes: Alarm Call, Yoga, and Unravel. We're going to start with a moment of passion and excitement. Alarm Call. I imagine Björk singing this song at the top of a mountain. She's been liberated by music and wants to share that magic with the world. I mean, listen to these lyrics. I want to go on a mountain top with radio and good batteries and play a giant tune and freeze that In its demo stage, the song was called Jacko, a supposed tribute to the anthemic songs of Michael Jackson. In an interview with Spin after Homogenic's release, Björk said, "I love Michael Jackson so much. He's got a ridiculous, outrageous, stubborn faith that magic is still with us." So, the song is offering hope, magic, and liberation. How does Björk's voice reinforce that message?
The thing I love about Alarm Call is that she uses her voice in so many different ways. I feel like it's almost like an orchestra of Björk, because it has the muffled ooh sounds and then the alarm beep, 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 and then the grinding sounds and then her normal singing. So I feel like it's almost like a Björk quartet going on. So, you know, speaking of using her voice as an instrument, I feel like that song highlights it rather well.
We heard that grinding sound when she sang "Free the Human Race from Suffering."
Free the human race from
That vocal grind mirrors the grit she has to overcome any obstacles in her way. So there's that, and her onomatopoeic background vocals. But I also love how Björk uses her voice in this song to express the inexpressible. Honestly, this song makes me feel like I can take on the world. Because no matter how hopeless it might seem, Björk reminds us, you can't say no to hope, can't say no to happiness. That line feels like a radical answer to the doom and gloom we encounter on the news every day. It reminds us that if you give in to despair, then you can't create meaningful change. And through her vocal performance, Björk delivers this message in a radically fresh and urgent way. Okay, let's move on to another emotional landscape. This is the song that brought us that phrase. It's Yoga. I feel emotional landscapes. They pass away. Björk wrote this song while meandering alone through the Icelandic wilderness. It's a tribute to her best friend, whom the song is named for, and her homeland. Björk said, quote, "With this song, I really had a sort of Icelandic national anthem in mind. Not the national anthem, but certain classic Icelandic songs. Very romantic, very proud, very patriotic, mountains, glaciers, that kind of thing." Close quote. There's this idea in romantic literature, you know, the English literature of Wordsworth and Coleridge and Burke, called sublime. Every writer had a different definition of what it was. But the way I understand it is that the sublime is a feeling of both pleasure and terror when you encounter a natural force much larger than yourself. Think imposing mountains or cliffs that drop straight into the ocean. For me, it's fitting that Björk drew inspiration from mountains and glaciers for this song, because here she's emoting the awe and fear of the sublime. You hear her fear in the opening verse. Her vocals sound breathy and rushed, like she can't get the words out fast enough. All these accidents that happen follow the dot. Coincidence makes sense only with you. You don't have to speak, I feel.
And she has this little quiver in her voice when she's saying feel, and it sounded like two things. It was almost like, because it wasn't just feel, but it drew out the sound, it almost felt like goosebumps in the way she was singing it. Like the feeling, you know, how you gradually get it on your arm. I also felt like that hesitation and stretching out the quiver and feel reminded me of taking a deep breath when you're kind of overwhelmed by your feelings.
In the chorus, that fear becomes cathartic as she sings about being in a beautiful state of emergency. And you push me up to this state of emergency.
How beautiful to be state of. And the way she pushes out the sound on state of emergency, it really sounds like a push to me, the way she gets it out. It's so cool because it's like an emotional flood bursting a dam, but it also, because the sound keeps rising and it's so sustained, it reminded me of a siren. And so that reflects back to the emergency. And by the way, I just love how she's like emergency instead of emergency. Yeah. I have a huge crush on that.
The way she sings state of emergency sounds urgent and ascendant. And bear with me here, the way she goes up and then down the scale on emergency kind of mirrors the peak of a mountain. Emergency. She goes up and then down on C. Emergency. How beautiful to be. Try charting the notes on a staff and maybe you'll see what I mean. If we just focus on the dynamics, that emergency line is also louder than the one after it. When she sings, "Is Where I Want to Be," it's like taking a breath after a steep climb uphill. Her performance reinforces the message and mood of the lyrics.
She goes from that sustained sound, but then when she goes down on "How Beautiful to Be" and "Is Where I Want to Be," you can hear this, especially on "Is Where I Want to Be," you can kind of hear this like curl of her lips when she says it, and her the way she pronounces it, and it's almost like you can hear her smiling. It shifts the mood. It's pleasant. I don't know how conscious any of these are, but at the same time, because she's willing to try different things as she performs the vocal, those differences make a difference. Those differences allow for these interpretations that I have, and I'm sure other people have many other interpretations. But it's so different from them just being like, "State of Emergency," you know, just a standard singing of the song.
So in yoga, Björk straddles two emotions, uncertainty and awe. The next song we're going to talk about also wrestles with two extremes, despair and hope. In this song, Björk puts the rational and irrational sides of her brain in conversation with each other. The song is Unravel.
So the first thing that I love about Unravel is all of the stuttering that happens in her vocals throughout the piece, especially every time she sings "Hour," and it's like the stuttering is almost like the unraveling. It's like you can feel the pull of the yarn. I think all of her stuttering is really beautiful too, because it really highlights that vulnerability that she's experiencing.
Björk also creates tension through her breathing. She has these sharp intakes of breath, like she's trying to control her emotions even as they're bubbling to the surface. You can feel the tension between sadness and composure. Now, structurally, the song is one big loop. It starts with Björk singing about how her heart unravels when her beloved is away. The fear and anguish builds in the pre-chorus when she sings about the devil taking away their love. It crests in the chorus when Björk simultaneously mourns their lost love and assures herself that it can be recreated. And then it goes back to the verse again.
It's almost illustrating a conflict between her heart and her mind, where her heart is the "he'll never return it," that really forceful, frustrated, desperate part of her. And then her mind is like, the rational thought is like calming her down, like, "he'll have to come back, we'll have to make new love." Yeah. And then at the end, you end on that note. And so it's like she finally won the battle over her negative emotions and that struggle she was experiencing.
Whether they admit it or not, anyone who has been in a long-distance relationship has felt this. Being with the person reassures you that what you have is real. But every time that person leaves, the uncertainty creeps back. Your mind might even turn to worst-case scenarios. Like when Björk cries, "he'll never return it." While the final line Björk sings is, "We'll have to make new love," the song doesn't have a definitive ending. It just fades out. So this is a process she will undergo over and over again, every time her beloved is gone. Now, I actually have one more song I wanted to mention. It's not one I was originally going to cover, but Marissa brought it up, and I think it's a good example of a Björk deep cut. I don't expect you all to love it now, but hopefully by the end of this series, you'll appreciate it. The song is Pluto.
I love it because it's capturing those hard emotions like I talked about at the beginning. I seriously feel each and every ooh in that song. There's like hardly any lyrics, but there's so much like ooh. It's like kind of a groaning quality. It's just like all the pain and frustration in life that makes you want to scream. It's like those moments in life where you're just like, ah, but she does it in a song. It's so brilliant. And so it's really cathartic to sing along with her. I also just really like the harshness in her vocal sound because it almost reminds me, I feel like it almost mimics when you have a string instrument and you take the bow and you play too close to the bridge. It has that gritty, rough, kind of painful sound to it. It's really uncomfortable to listen to, but that's what's so brilliant about it is that it reflects that discomfort she feels in her own skin. And I love the fact that it ends with a scream. Just like finally, like beyond words, we're just like, ah!
Yeah, so I guess that's not something that you would start with, but once you've gotten into Björk more, you can appreciate it a little more.
Once you actually feel comfortable exploring all of your feelings instead of the acceptable 5.
I know I'm asking a lot of you. I'm asking you to listen to an artist whose music can be jarring and unpleasant. And I'm asking you to do this when you have the entire library of recorded music available at your fingertips. You could be listening to the soothing balm of Ella Fitzgerald or the dulcet tones of Harry Styles. So why should you take the time to explore and appreciate a vocalist who wails and groans and even screams?
I feel like her music, it can be intense and brooding, obviously, with some of the ones we've talked about. I feel like her music is also very playful. I always feel like her music is super fun and makes me laugh. And instead of being like, that's so weird the way she said that, I'm like, that is so interesting and delightful, you know, or that cracks me up. Like, whether or not she meant to make it funny, probably some of the things I think are funny are not funny to her. But at the same time, it's funny for me because it's entertaining and because it's different. I always think of It's Oh So Quiet.
You wanna love, you wanna cry, you cross your heart and hope to die.
I feel like that's the one where I think it's so delightful and playful, but then I've played it for other people and they're like, why is she screaming? I'm like, because she's in love and she has an excess of emotion of excitement. Like, why not scream if you're in love? What's the problem? What's the real problem with screaming if you're in love? Have you ever been in love? You know, like, it's okay to feel a lot. When you fall in love. I feel a very deep physical reaction to her music. And I think if you take the time to feel, instead of just having a moment where your ears are enjoying the music, it's like your whole body can enjoy the music. You can feel it throughout your whole body. It has like a very visceral quality to it. And I don't think I've ever listened to anybody else who achieves that like full body kind of experience of music the way I feel when I listen to her music.
So far, we've talked a lot about how Björk conveys messages in her music, but we haven't spent enough time examining what she's saying. In the next episode, we'll dive into the soundtrack Björk wrote for the film Dancer in the Dark and uncover her brilliance as a storyteller. You've been listening to Björk Unraveled, a series that demystifies Björk's music one piece at a time. Björk Unraveled is produced independently by me, Savannah Ray. If you liked this episode, please share it with a friend and submit a review on whatever podcast app you're using. Share your thoughts with me on Facebook and Instagram at Björk Unraveled. You'll find a new episode in your feeds every other Thursday. Thanks for listening.